I'd like to introduce Ava Black, who is working on security attestation ideas within the scope of the CRA and is going to tell us about her work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Been a little while since I presented at FOSDEM. It's great to be back. So for those who don't know me in the last couple of years, I was doing open source security policy at Microsoft and then kind of got pulled into more public policy, joined CISA for a while, moved over here last year, and now working on this with both Eclipse and the commission, trying to figure out how to make this all work. So quick overview of the talk, and for those who are coming in the back, there's tons of seats up front. I'll give a quick background and overview of the regulation. I think the previous talk, if you were here for it, also covered a bunch of that, but also touch on other regulations. I'm just going to focus on the CRA. I'll give you a little bit of info on the progress of our working group. It's been running for a few months. Some of the challenges we've identified, and some of them are pretty interesting, so we'd love your help. Definitely, at the end of this, hopefully more folks will come get involved in solving these problems together. And then my talk will be only about 20 minutes. We will go maybe have time for one or two questions, then shift into a panel. A couple more folks will join me up here, and we'll go through some questions for that, and then take questions from all of you. So a couple years ago, at a FOSDEM adjacent event, I got teased a little bit by some of my European colleagues that you know, America innovates, but Europe regulates, and that's not a bad thing. I think they were absolutely right. But maybe America's innovation didn't go far enough with this one. Back in 2023, I had the chance to consult with the White House as they were drafting their national cybersecurity strategy, and then found out months later they actually quoted me in it. This is like maybe some of the proudest sentences I've ever said. Right? The burden has to be on the users of the software, not on the free and open source software developers. That was written into the strategy, but not really into law in the US. I'm so delighted it is encoded in the CRA, which introduces the concept of the open source steward as a new type of legal actor. Manufacturer, contributor, developer, maintainer, foundation, and a steward. And it defines this a bit. This is sort of what we're all grappling with as the CRA implementation moves along. This is a new concept legally. The lawyers don't know what to do with it quite yet. We're still waiting for some guidance around the definition of it, though it's much better understood now than 2 years ago. And this is a uniquely European framework at the moment. There are a couple definitions I want to emphasize for folks. Manufacturer has a specific definition that is distinct from an open source steward. There is no effect from this on personal expression, hobby projects, just writing code, making contributions. There's no obligation there. But there are some obligations for those two classes of actors. Manufacturers have specific obligations with respect to open source. They have to exercise due diligence, it's a legal term, if they're using open source in their product. I suspect most manufacturers aren't doing that today. If they find a vulnerability in the open source they're using, they have to share the awareness of that, report the vulnerability to the open source project, and if they fix it, they have to offer the fix back to the project. The project doesn't need to take it. There's no requirement on the project, but there is a requirement on manufacturers to do these things, including to include open source in their SBOM and in their assessments for product risk and product safety, and to handle the open source vulnerabilities throughout the product lifecycle. So if they chose to use open source and 5 years from now or 2 years from now, the project fixes a vulnerability, the manufacturer still has a responsibility because they chose to rely on it. On the steward side, it's very lightweight. You have to publish documentation about your cybersecurity policies, your vulnerability handling policy, how to receive a report about a vulnerability, or how to notify people who've used your project that they should go fix something, or you know, pull down a fix, backport something from you. And notably, stewards under this new framework must have both the willingness and the capacity to cooperate with market surveillance authorities and with cybersecurity coordination authorities like ENISA. And this has been pretty common among the larger projects, Linux kernel, Apache, Python, OpenStack, etc. It's less common in the small projects, but it isn't required in every project. Again, none of this is required for hobby projects or your non-commercial open source that you're just writing with some friends. This only applies to organizations that want to function as a steward. This is relevant to the question of sustainability that I'm going to get to. This pattern seems to emerge from careful reading of the legal text of the CRA and the context around it, that the goal of these regulations is that stewards in particular, but also maintainers or other participants in the open source ecosystem, can help the market benefit from open source efficiencies. We already do that. Open source has proven over the past 30 years to be perhaps the most economically efficient innovation engine we've ever seen as humans. And it is global, it is across borders. These are fantastic emergent properties of what we do in open source. But because there's so much lack of digital safety right now, devices failing or being vulnerable or being hacked, right, the regulation is coming down that says manufacturers of products with digital goods have a responsibility, a burden, to keep their products safe. Well, if the manufacturers are going to be benefiting from the efficiencies of open source, they need to help support that. The regulation is pretty clear on that, but doesn't specify the mechanism yet. It does set aside the power for the commission to specify it in the future. And throughout the CRA, there are these couple different delegated acts. Basically, the commission says, we're not sure how to solve this yet, as of a couple years ago, but we might solve it soon. We're probably going to solve it soon. And in this case, they've asked for all of us to sort of discuss it and add input and help them figure out what's going to work for open source. If you watched the keynotes yesterday or some of the talks in Janssen today or the one right before this, you will have noticed a theme this year all over FOSDEM. Commission and other European government folks are here. They're asking for input. They've been building this engagement with open source because open source communities are now part of civil society and global digital infrastructure. And this article is expressing that need to figure out how to get the two to work together in a sustainable way. So we started a project back in October-ish to explore this and try to model how it might work. We came up with a lot of questions. Right now we have some theories about this, but the deeper we dig, the more questions we end up with. The Eclipse ORC Open Regulatory Compliance Working Group, the speaker before me was also talking a lot about what the ORC Working Group does. They also have come across some of the same questions and posted them and posed them to the commission, and they're waiting for some responses. Some of them in particular relevant here is the legal text says a manufacturer could be a natural person or a legal person, that's like a human or a company or a foundation, but the legal text says only a legal person can be a steward, which I don't know if that doesn't, like, lots of individual people maintain open source projects that are super important. The legal text is a bit vague on that. There's a whole bunch of other things where the legal text leaves a lot of questions. But as a group, we have this goal. Find a way to reduce the market burden of reassessing every open source component in every product, right? If every manufacturer had to do that, it would be terribly inefficient. And most manufacturers don't have the technical capacity or the budget to do a full audit of all the open source they use. If you've seen any of the Black Duck or other sort of analyses and audits of the supply chain, you may have seen stats like 95% of companies use open source and 90% of their stack is open source, or numbers like that. Your average small company that makes a product in Europe doesn't have this, or America or anywhere, doesn't have the in-house knowledge to go do an audit of the Linux kernel and everything else they're using. So again, there's an efficiency here if somehow that open source code can be deemed under the CRA as safe enough. But because it isn't manufactured, it doesn't get a CE mark, there's not a company there, there's some other mechanism needed. Can this also support the shared responsibility of doing the maintenance? And can this account for projects of all sizes, from the really big ones to the single maintainers, or just the loose collection of people who maintain a project that's 20 years old and works fine still, and the world still runs on it, like a DNS server. We've made some progress in the past couple of months. We've developed a tiered model to try and account for these, you know, the very small and the very large, the microscopic and the cosmologic of open source. We've clarified a couple of questions around financial mechanisms and transitive dependencies, because of course projects like Debian build out of 10,000 other components. And the text makes clear that a third-party attestation is possible, is in scope, but what does it mean for open source if an unaffiliated entity makes one of these attestations about a project that they aren't equipped to actually handle vulnerabilities, not participating in writing it? What does that even mean, and is it valuable? It's the nature of a delegated act. It doesn't have to specify that yet, but it might in the future. So we've been exploring all that. I'll talk for a moment about the tiers we've come up with. The light tier and the heavy tier, based on a reasonably foreseeable capability of projects that don't have a ton of commercial support or that do have significant commercial support. The light tier might be applicable for a component or a library. It doesn't even have a clear product-like use case yet. Maybe it's just a compression utility. On the heavy tier side, it might be functionally equivalent to a commercial product. It might be only modified a tiny bit when being incorporated into an actual commercial product. This might be a browser or a word processor or a cloud orchestration engine. And if you go into the deep nerdery of the CRA and conformity assessments, there are these things called Module A or Module B and C or Module H assessments. The heavy attestation seems more appropriate for things that would require a Module B and C or a Module H assessment if they were products, because the products will need those. So it's just sort of about aligning that. The light attestation, I'll show you a template we've got in a moment, the draft right now. It really doesn't require a lot of time investment. I've been a maintainer for about half of my career of some big projects, a couple small projects. I think I could fill out this sort of a lightweight form in a matter of minutes for any project I've ever worked on. Most of it's automatable. Based on the BSI's guidance they published, I think, back in November. And it's pretty similar to Salsa already. Like, it should be well understood. We just sort of drafted it up based on a European standard. On the heavy side, this gets a bit tricky and more into the unknowns right now, because most of the CRA vertical standards aren't publicly available. Even if they are available through a national standards body for review, they're not widely available yet. So to say, we think the heavy attestation might need to be similar to those doesn't help open source communities, because those are locked up in national standardization process inside STEN and ISO. And even when they're finalized, you might still need to spend money to get access, and they might still be IPR restrictions on them that are incompatible with open source. I don't know yet. We'll see how all that shakes out. That's a much bigger topic I'm not going to go into. Here's the template. Again, it's really simple. This is just a draft. This is what we think would work. Would love feedback on this. It's basically, do you have a contributor, you know, guideline? Do you have licenses? Do you check them? Do you have functional tests? Is there a vulnerability reporting point of contact? And are you going to be there if someone actually does report a vulnerability? Like, do you have an end of life? You know, are you promising that if you ever stop maintaining the project, you're just going to make a post that says, dead now? Like, it's the basic hygiene of being an open source project, very low bar. Unfortunately, it's a higher bar than a lot of manufacturers are incorporating today, and that's the key. Having this low bar harmonized sets a standard for industry to rely on it. And there's a lot of similar things that the OpenSSF has been doing, that other groups have been doing, to try and take the best practices that have emerged from 30 years of open source in Apache and Debian and OpenStack and so on, and just harmonize those across as much open source as has commercial utility, as developers are intending it for commercial use, so that the industry that relies on all this can have a consistent thing to rely on, and thus reduce errors, reduce risk. But, like I said, a lot of questions really remain unanswered. The cost structure, or the costs and the structures for stewards as legal entities today would vary by country. If they are established in Europe, well, the laws are different in each country. A Stiftung in Germany and a Stichting in Netherlands and an AISBL here in Belgium have very different nuances. And maybe your project has developers from multiple countries, and maybe the type of entity you would use if you were to create a new legal entity to become a steward has residence requirements in a country or language requirements in a country that are incompatible with some members of your community. That's not ideal. So these are the kinds of questions that keep coming up as I dig into this. The other one is that tax incentives seem kind of misaligned. A steward's activities, maintenance, participation in vulnerability handling, bug fixing, are usually exempted from tax incentives. Companies and countries provide research funding or research-based tax incentives, but those are often exclusionary to maintenance and fixing of bugs. So this is another area where contacting your officials, your members of parliament, or your local governments to try and figure this out might be helpful. As an open source maintainer myself for a long time, I've always struggled in big companies with this, watching the dev teams that don't do open source, their staff grow because they get financial incentives to do that, while the teams that do open source maintenance get defunded because there aren't tax incentives for them. So this isn't just a problem unique to the CRN stewards, but it's been around for a while. Where we are as a project right now, we have biweekly meetings every Tuesday. We have a room on Matrix, a mailing list, GitHub. Please, you know, contribute to it, open review or comment on reviews. If you are working in some of these spaces and have ideas of how to fix this, please do come tell us. More ideas and ideas from corners of the open source communities that we don't yet have would be super helpful. We just launched a small survey. So whether you are a maintainer, a developer, a manufacturer, a manager at a tech company, more input on this survey would be really helpful for us to understand how ready people are, how interested people are, and if people think any of this might work. I'll leave it up. I see some cameras, so I'll leave it up a little longer. And lastly, I think I've heard four other talks this week say, hey, the commission right now has an open call for feedback, for input on open source, the European open digital ecosystem. And considering the CRA is the first regulation specifically touching on open source and changing some of the structures around open source, it's a great opportunity to go have your say as well for how you think these kinds of things should be implemented over the next couple of years, what sort of things should be funded, should the commission do certain studies or investigations, or just what's your opinion on how great open source is. This is a great opportunity to go have your say. And with that, I want to say thank you and invite my panelists down.